today, Julie.
Hey, Julie.
Welcome to Hey, Julie, a podcast that is no longer about Big Brother. Well, it's still about Big Brother, but it's not about Big Brother for one more month.
Yeah, still officially a month to go, even though summer has started. Summer has started and we're thriving in it.
We are. Danielle, I got to say, you're in a new location. We're back to doing the live stream after my month-long sabbatical to the East Coast. You got to keep the camera stabilized. Oh. We're like 1 second in and like you're... We saw the wall. We're just like full on blank wall for a second.
It did? Okay, well, I'm sorry. I am bouncing my laptop on a pillow on my lap, okay?
Okay, I'm just saying. This is what...
Professional.
If you're not podcast. Watching on YouTube... I know a lot of you aren't. This is what you can get.
Yeah, you're missing the truth.
It is Canada Day today. Happy Canada Day to you.
Thank you.
It is the 4th of July in a couple of days. It's essentially 4th of July weekend other than the fact that I have to freaking go to work on Monday.
Yeah.
So it's a big holiday weekend here. Usually Big Brother is on. Usually the house guests are barbecuing. They're getting a little bit of hot dogs. I still find it very, like, I still can't get this image out of my head on like BB2 or BB3. They're like, hey, Sheryl Crow's here. Happy 4th of July. Whatever. And she played like Soak Up the Sun in the backyard.
Oh my gosh. That's a great, wow. Why isn't Sheryl Crow releasing any new music?
She doesn't need to.
Yeah, that's so true.
She doesn't need to.
At a certain point.
I also wouldn't be surprised with her headwear. If she were like, hey, man, the woke mind virus is going to get you all.
Oh, you think she's like that and that's the way it is?
She wears a hat. She wears a cowboy hat.
That's true. That's true.
Sheryl Crow going on Instagram Live, shooting cans of Bud Light.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Maybe.
I don't know. Didn't mean to get into that. Anyway.
How can you not when it's our 4th of July episode? It's hard to avoid.
Oh. What are the common delicacies and traditions on Canada Day?
Canada Day, it's very similar to USA Day. The difference I would say is that every year Canadians do try to cancel Canada Day and are often actually somewhat successful. This year, I guess we're not supposed to celebrate because there's too much smoke and we shouldn't have fireworks because that will contribute to the smoke. I think it's probably a pretty negligible amount of smoke from the fireworks that will contribute to the very large amount of smoke coming from the huge wildfires. But
you guys can't put these things out?
They can't. They can't. No.
They were going on like a month ago.
I know, it's been so long. And it's finally, it is affecting us a little bit here in Toronto. The AQI, I was saying, is higher than we want it to be, especially for a holiday weekend. But it's funny, sad, how quickly we acclimate. I was looking, I was like, oh, it's only AQI 6. I'm going to go sit on the roof. Like, so AQI 6 is pretty bad, I think.
Yeah, I mean... When I was in New York, when it was really bad a couple weeks ago, everyone was like, I got places to go.
Yeah.
I got things to do.
That's the thing is we are humans. We just keep, people just want to keep living. Everyone still has COVID and we still just want to keep living our lives.
I do.
I know.
I don't want to get COVID.
I don't either.
Anyways, so much to talk about today. Pop culture episode today.
Big time.
The Bear season 2, going to talk about it. I saw a new Wes Anderson film called Asteroid City, going to talk about it. You saw the new J-Law joint, No Hard Feelings. We are going to talk extensively about the trailer. I know everyone's dying for this. Both of us have lots of thoughts about the trailer for Gran Turismo.
Yes.
A racing movie with Orlando Bloom.
Yes, and David Harbour. I love it.
Where
David
shall
Harbour.
We start, Danielle?
Should we just start with Gran Turismo? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, we should. You know what? Because it's a preview. We're going to talk about a preview to something. This is the preview. You texted me the other day with like, what are we going to talk about? I saw this movie. You saw that movie. And you're like, I need to talk about the trailer for Gran Turismo. So Danielle, tell me what you need to talk about.
Okay, well, let me set the scene. I went and saw No Hard Feelings alone by myself. at 12 p.m. on a Thursday because I took the day off. And I was like, oh my gosh, mom's big day out. What can I do alone that I used to love doing? I used to love going to the theaters by myself, and I still do.
A matinee by yourself is a great pleasure.
It's a treat.
I saw a movie by myself. I saw Asteroid City by myself. It was not a matinee because I didn't take a mommy's day out, but I loved it. I had a great time.
It's such a treat. You go. I got my favorite drink. I think I've told you about this. I've told the world about this. The 12% Coke, where I tell the unfortunate person working at the concession stand, I want 12% regular Coke and the rest plain seltzer. So I got my drink like that. It was delicious. Haven't I told you about this, Brett?
That's like what an alcoholic orders at a bar when they're not drinking. No, you haven't told me about that. That's crazy. I'm okay, so sorry.
So that's all I got to drink.
Do you tip?
You don't tip at the concession stand?
For such a complicated order.
They have no way of doing that.
Do you actually say 12%?
No, I actually make it easy on them and I say 10%.
10%, okay. I think that's easier. Go by the metric system here.
I will say every time I order this, people are very nice. I would do it myself. I wish we still had the self-serve soda fountains, but we don't.
I was going to say movie theaters in America have moved towards self-serve.
I wish we had that. Wait, quick pause. My GarageBand stopped recording. What can I do?
StreamYard is still recording, so hopefully that doesn't break down.
Okay.
We'll see if this podcast is any good.
All right, so I tucked into my little seat, and I was served this trailer, and admittedly, I haven't been to the movies in a long time, but I was like, wow, is this what the movies are now? So they had to have gotten a 14-year-old boy to be the consultant on this film. Much like how you were a consultant on Dungeons & Dragons because of your avid Dungeons & Dragons
play. I was an unpaid consultant on Dungeons & Dragons.
I think they had to have
unless you consider I was paid in an everything bagel.
Yes, exactly. And maybe that's what they did for this movie. But so Gran Turismo, it just hit everything that a 14-year-old boy would want in a movie. And for some reason, that also appealed to me, 34-year-old, not teenage boy mother. Okay, let me break it down. Gran Turismo is a video game?
It is a video game.
Okay, but it's also a racing event. But it is a real racing event too, right?
I am not familiar with any sort of real life application of Gran Turismo. They're like, this is based on a true story. And I'm like,
yes,
I believe you.
Because loved that
I only know this as a very like realistic driving simulator. And I remember when I got like the PS1 or the PS2, it like came with Gran Turismo. And I was like, and the game kind of sucked because it had like very realistic driving physics in that like you had to slow down. You had to like step on the brake, which was stupid. Like,
wow,
I'm a boy.
You should brake. You should brake when you're racing. Basically the plot. Let me get into the plot. There's this kid. He's down on his luck kid. And this movie features one of my favorite things, which is snobs versus slobs. But anyway, there's this down on his luck kid who, you know, doesn't have the money to ride in a Ferrari or a Lambo, but he dreams of it. And he is so good at playing video games. Like, this kid is so fucking good at video games, okay? And he's like, Dad, Mom, like, this is the way I'm going to live my life. This is how I'm going to make a living. And they're like, no, you need to be a bricklayer or like something realistic.
Yeah,
like,
his dad is a Jimon Hansu. And he's like, you have to be like me, son.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we don't play video games. Video games don't make money. But of course, it's like, you know, Gen Z in the audience is like, boo, you parents don't know anything. Yes, we can make money from doing this. Anyway, so the kid is so good at playing his car racing video games that Orlando Bloom, who I guess is like a real race car driving owner, like
manager, I don't know.
He's like unconventional. He's going to change the way things are done. He's like, I'm going to put together a ragtag team of teenage boys who are really good at doing this in the video games. And they're going to be so fucking good that we're going to give them the keys to the Lambo and they're going to win the Gran Turismo race, which is based on a true story. Based on a true story is the true story that there are car races. Like, yes, agreed. That's true. Anyway, then David Harbour shows up and he's the driver coach. And he's like, these kids don't understand. You lose in a game, you restart. You lose in real life, you could die. The kids, because like they show this training. They have to do a training montage with the kids where they're like running in the heat and doing push-ups. And all the time I'm like, I really actually don't think they need to do that to drive a car. Do you actually need to take a run?
No, I've seen this trailer so many times now, including I saw this trailer last night. I saw this trailer 2 times this week because I've been to the theater. I went to the movies on Thursday night and Friday night, and I want to talk about a variation of the Gran Turismo trailer because I've seen both variations this week. I've seen both variations multiple times. They're advertising the hell out of this movie. First of all, I know I don't watch motorsports.
Me neither.
They are certainly not playing football or sprinting or doing anything that you would consider a traditional sport movement, you know? Right.
To require like athletic prowess.
They are athletes though, in that it is incredibly physically demanding because like you are sitting in a car that's like 100 degrees for 4 hours. And like, you have to turn, like when you make a right turn going 9 miles an hour at a stoplight or whatever, like it's not very physically taxing. The cars are designed like for you to drive your minivan and like, it's fine. But when it's like the whole design of the car is like, it's supposed to be going 200 miles an hour the entire time. Like there is a lot of like physical torque in doing it. And like, this is incredibly stupid, but I went like go-kart racing a few months ago.
Uh-huh.
And you have the go-karts and I'm incredibly competitive at stupid things like this. So I'm like trying to win. I'm trying to beat like 9-year-olds who are there. Uh-huh. And I'm like twisted and like jamming it and doing the brake and like trying to come in turns and stuff. And you know, it's like a 10, 15 minute wait. By the end of the race, I was like, I could feel, maybe it's because I'm like incredibly out of shape, but I could feel my torso just like, you know, a little bit tight because I'm like, I'm like cranking the wheel.
The torque.
You know?
Yeah.
So they're not like, there's never going to be an Olympics for like how fast you can drive a car. Like in the way the Olympics are like, how fast can you run 100 meters?
Yeah.
How fast can you swim? Right? How good can you play ping pong?
How far can you things throw that we the do shot
at
put.
The Olympics? Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, exactly. So they're not going to do that. But these people are athletes. I'm sorry. That was a stupid sidebar. I need to talk about the second trailer for this movie because I think it gets to the, because you're right. There is this sort of like, I'm Gen Z. I can play video games and be famous.
Parents don't understand.
The amazing thing about this trailer, and they show this trailer every movie. You go see 80 for Brady, they're giving you Gran Turismo trailer. They want you to see this movie. There is a alternate version of the trailer that opens with Orlando Bloom, David Harbour, and the young man who plays the lead.
Yeah.
And they are staring at the camera as themselves. They have different haircuts and facial hair. And they're like, hey, it's me, David Harbour from Stranger Things and Orlando Bloom from the Pirates movies. Please, for the love of God, see this movie. This is a true story about overcoming adversity.
Yeah.
And the young man who plays the lead, he's like, it's so inspiring because the actual kid who was playing video games and became the Gran Turismo driver is a stunt driver on this film, and it's the actor who plays him sitting on a director's chair across from the real life kid who did this thing. And the real life guy is like, yeah, you know what, there's so much attention to detail in this movie and it's just like my life. And it's basically 2 minutes of them of just like behind the scenes b-roll and them just pleading with you, please see this movie.
Wow,
it's based on a real story. And then they show the trailer. And it seems to me like it's trying to combat some sort of attention span deficit thing, or like really hammer home the true story nature, like really hammer home the human interest of this. Of like, please understand this story. Please identify with these people at all.
Right.
And then they to get people to pay attention to the trailer. Other things.
Yes.
Directed by Neil Blomkamp of
right.
District
of
9.
Chappie. Oh, go ahead. Of Chappie. Of Chappie. I'm telling you, every part of this trailer, I was like, you got me. You got me. You got me.
I'm not dropping like $18 to see this movie.
No.
But something about it, it's coming out like August 20th or whatever. Happy birthday to us.
Yeah.
And something about it was like, this is a very perfectly adequate, like late summer
yes.
movie. It's going to be hot outside. I want to go into the theater at 2 p.m., eat some candy, be cooled off by the air conditioner, and watch cars go fast.
Vroom, vroom, bitch. Like, that's what I should have called this movie.
I'm probably never going to watch this movie, but it doesn't look terrible. And there is something sort of, it looks like a regular classic summer action racing movie.
It's one of those movies that will that I don't know if this still happens, but like would play yet like on TV, commercial breaks cut in on TBS or TNT, sure. And like
we know drama
through repetition, I don't even know if you like it or not, but you do start enjoying the movie. And it's like the chance to see one of those films in the theaters and not a Marvel piece of shit, I think is a charming proposition. And
like,
they sold
me. I saw
me.
This trailer last night for Blue Beetle, which I thought was I posted this in our Discord a few months ago. And it was like someone had posted like this grid of like every big yes. franchise movie coming out in 2023. And the Blue Beetle one, I was like, this is a joke. You guys are trying to trick me with one of these because I have not seen this logo before. I'm not aware of it. It's a superhero. He exists and he's called Blue Beetle.
Who
he's
plays
a giant
the
Blue
Beetle? Blue
Beetle.
Who plays
some, it? Some kid that you've never heard of.
Interesting.
And it just watching the trailer, like the Flash movie we talked about last week, bombed. People know who the Flash is. Batman was in the Flash. They're like, Flash? More like the Batman featuring the Flash. Please see this movie. And no one did. Blue Beetle? No one's going to see this movie. And it just looked like the final conclusion of like, we're done with this.
Yeah.
This is over. This doesn't look real. It looks like a student film and it looks fake. It looks like a fake trailer. And
I had to look it up.
This is the end of superhero movies. Like they're going to continue coming out, but this is the conclusion, and we can kind of move on to whatever the next thing is.
I say RIP, and but I mean rest in piss because I don't like those movies. And this brings me to my review of a film I did enjoy. A film.
Gran Turismo.
Yeah, I wish. Not yet. A film I saw in theaters, the film that came after Gran Turismo. No Hard Feelings, starring J-Law. Okay, so has everyone seen... I'm guessing everyone knows the plot of this movie, which is that J-Law is a local in Montauk who... she owns her house, but the only way that she can survive is she's an Uber driver in the summer, and that's where she makes enough money to, like, last her the rest of the year. She's an Uber driver.
But I want to understand the economics of this, but we're going to have to move on.
We're going to have to move on. She owns her house
outright.
I'm just
bumping against the economics right now. That's all I'm saying.
Well, she's a very... There's some good comedy about it. She's a local in Montauk, and she hates all of the rich people who are, like, buying up all of the land and, like, whatever. She loses her car because, I don't know, it's not paid off, and she loses her car.
You saw the movie? How do you not know?
I don't understand car stuff. I don't understand
car stuff. You don't have a car. Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
I don't get it.
I visited Danny this month. No car in sight.
No car. Then we have a parking spot. We could rent it out because we don't have a car.
Ooh.
So she needs a car. So then she comes across Craigslist, and there's no other way for her to make money. She's like, you know, she's a 30-something gal who... She doesn't have direction in life. All she had was that car and her house that her mom left to her, which is fully paid off. Anyway, on a very expensive piece of land in Montauk. Anyway, so there's this Craigslist ad of these rich people in Montauk who say, we will give you this car in perfect condition if you date in quotation marks, our son. And so obviously it's implied she has to go, but get the son out of his shell, right? Have sex with him. But yeah, also like make him party, like show him, get him out of his room. He's one of these kids who's just like constantly in his room. They make a big deal about how socially awkward he is, blah, blah, blah. This movie is so charming. I mean, that plot is crazy. I know that plot is so crazy, but she sells it. Let me tell you something. We were just talking about Marvel, and this is what I was thinking. Marvel and or DC, whatever, all of these superhero movies have produced some brand name recognition with the stars, right? Like Chris Evans or Chris Hemsworth or
Chris Pratt.
Ezra Pine, whatever that guy's name is.
Yeah, Chris Ezra Miller.
Ezra Miller.
Who shall not be mentioned.
Exactly. But not one of them has the star quality that J-Lo possesses in her pinky toe. I mean, not they just do not have the riz, as the kids say.
Even gave him a hug.
She, like when you, and especially seeing her on the big screen, because I haven't seen J-Lo in a movie for a while. I think she took a break. And she was really on a string of like total fucking flops. Like her IMDb list after Hunger Games, after the David O. Russell collabs, pretty bad. It was like Red Sparrow, Passengers. Don't Look Up, I actually didn't think was that bad. But it's been a while. I
did not like that picture.
It's been a while. And so seeing her huge face on a huge screen and her physical comedy, her intelligence, her depth, her charm, I just thought, like, she really is our Julia Roberts. I mean, in an even better way, because she's actually, I think Julia Roberts is very talented, but I think there is just a certain confidence and like depth to J-Lo that she brings to even a movie like this, which is pretty stupid. It's a stupid movie, but she elevates it. And I'm just saying, none of these other fucking superhero actors can elevate a film. She elevated this movie.
There is so much to talk about here.
Okay.
Particularly the IMDb of young J-Law.
Yeah.
She breaks on the scene with Winter's Bone. She's been in a bunch of stuff, but Winter's Bone is like, oh, wow, this person's like huge. Special.
Yeah.
Special. She's got it.
She does.
And here's the crazy thing. She gets immediately signed to be in the hot young X-Men reboot.
Right.
As the blue girl, as the girl who's either blue
or someone else.
She's played by a different actor because she's a morphing person. She's a morpher.
Mighty
she's
Morphin. An animorph. Mighty Morphin J-Law, yes.
And she's in those movies. They keep finding ways for her to morph into a young blonde woman who looks exactly like Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, sure.
Because after one movie, she, and everyone knows why she, why do we have her, why do we have young Julia Roberts in blue?
Yeah. Rhapsody in blue.
Dabba-dee-dabba-die. She follows it up with Hunger Games and Silver Linings. She wins an Oscar for Silver Linings.
Yeah.
And she does the Hunger Games. I haven't seen a Hunger Game. I'm sorry.
I have.
People love it. But it's huge. But she's trapped. So she's like kind of doing three different franchises at the same time. She's doing the X-Men. Yes. She's blue.
Yeah.
And she's like increasingly in these movies less and less because she's like,
I'm busy.
I'm not getting in the makeup chair at 4 a.m. for this bullshit. She's paying the bills with the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
And that's huge, but I'm sure a little bit creatively unfulfilling. And then I would just call doing David O. Russell stuff the third franchise because she does that. Right. She does American Hustle. Did David O. do Joy?
Yes.
Oh, my Lord. She does that. She does Joy. Nobody saw Joy. Nobody liked Joy.
I saw Joy.
You liked it? How was it?
No, I didn't like it. I thought it was a waste of her talents. I don't think David O. Russell is a good director. Period.
This might be true because my favorite David O. Russell movie is Three Kings. And by all accounts, George Clooney directed that film.
Yeah, I don't know why they let him. I think she's the reason why they were like, oh, yeah, he's good. Because she was always good in the movies. But I don't, and Bradley Cooper was fine in Silver Linings. I hated Silver. I thought Silver Linings sucked. I thought American Hustle was almost unwatchable. And yeah, Joy also, it's, they're all so meandering. They're Passengers, so meandering.
Flop.
Saw it.
Mother!
Saw it.
Flop. Red Sparrow.
Saw it.
She's doing a lot of stuff that is, and it's interesting because all this stuff is like very, I don't know. There's like a lot of weird sexual stuff happening in all these movies, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, yeah. She's very open.
Passengers. She is greenlit into like starting a new human race with Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
Mother. There's bad stuff happening there.
Yeah.
Red Sparrow. There's a whole thing about how they're sexually abusing all the Red Sparrows.
Well, the Red Sparrow itself is like
a spy movie. They're all like these Russian spies. It's like
the type of spy she is like she's the sex spy.
She's like she's a honeypot.
Yeah.
And then, okay, so she does Don't Look Up. What I was not a huge fan of that. She does Causeway this year, which is an Apple TV thing that no one on earth has seen other than the people who nominated Brian Tyree Henry for an Oscar. For this film, he's a great actor. I'm not saying anything about it. Just no one's seen this movie.
No.
And then I think this is interesting because like she's doing another sex thing. This is like a sex comedy, an R-rated sex comedy. But she's flipping it. She's flipping the script. She has the power. But it also feels to me like a career reset. Like
Hard reset.
Hard reset. I'm doing some. Like I'm doing like a Jim Carrey movie.
Yes.
Right. And like, she's not going to be doing a Hunger Games, you know, re-Hunger Games. She's not going to be doing an X-Men. Oh, the X-Men are in the multiverse. Oh, maybe.
Like, we'll bring back the blue girls. Both
blue girls will be back. They'll point at each other like Spider-Man. So I'm just really, this is really interesting. I'm like, she got to fire her agent. I mean, agent made a lot of money. She did fire
her agent. That's why she's in this movie.
And we talked about with Tom Holland too. Like Tom Holland is in a bunch of like really stupid movies. He's like either, he looks like he's nine.
Yeah.
And he's either playing Spider-Man, who is a nine-year-old.
Yes.
Or.
Famously.
Or he's like playing like a swashbuckling hero who like jumps off his shit. It's like, no, this kid's nine.
He is nine. He is nine.
I want to see Harrison Ford. He's doing like Harrison Ford movies.
Call Daniel Day-Lewis because he's nine.
Okay. What? Oh my gosh. That is a great.
That's why people listen to this podcast. That is a
reference of the day today.
No, but Jay and then the kid, listen, speaking of nine, the nine-year-olds, the kid they cast to be the male lead in this, who's like the 19-year-old freak, he's also so fabulous. And I'm just trying, but I'm thinking to myself as I'm watching this, I can't think of another. And I will say, now here's where I get into another thing. I think the young female Hollywood talent, especially out of America, is very strong. You know, you've got J-Law. I count anyone 35 and under, I'm going to say. So that would include me. A J-Law.
A 35 and under. So you have 13 more months.
J-Law. Emma Stone. Zendaya.
Emma Stone's like our age too.
Zendaya. Yeah, 35 these and
are,
under.
These are old.
No, they're
these
not.
These
are old.
They're playing. If they can play mothers, then I don't know if they're young.
J-Law was playing a mother when she was like 22. Hollywood is different for women. Yeah, she was mother. So what are you talking about? Hollywood is different for women. Zendaya, Sydney Sweeney, Jenna Ortega. Like, there are just a lot of very talented, interesting. Aubrey Plaza. I think she's actually older. But
she's like 40.
There's all this great talent.
Gorgeous 40.
And then when you think about the male actors, I'm very
Tom Holland. Yeah.
Like Tom Holland. He's not even American. How
old is Austin Butler? He's either 19 or he's 53. I don't know.
Austin is good, but we need to see more range from Austin. Like, Timmy Chalamet?
I'm not. I mean, he's good and stuff, but like, I'm not. He's good. Michelle,
I'm not saying these people aren't talented, but I'm just saying they don't have what like J-Law, Emma Stone, Zendaya, whoever else. There are a lot of young female actresses, I think, who are very special. And I just don't think there are as many special boys.
I think, is there more to say about this? Because I have a good transition.
I guess I don't want to get in the way of a good transition, but I in case it isn't clear, I really think J-Law is absolutely fabulous. She's so good in the movie. The movie's very fun. It is not.
Actually, I don't have a good transition.
So I'm almost done. It's not like a great film. It's a fun movie. And when did it become a crime to have fun at the movies?
I don't know. They're trying. Right. They're trying to take it away. They're trying now to take I'm it
done.
Away.
If it's a crime, lock me up and throw away the key. I'm done. I liked it. See it or rent it, you know.
I'm going to make a different transition because I want to save the bear for last. I had a bear transition. I want to save the bear for last because I'm going to go deep on the bear. I saw a picture this week. You saw, you know, this is the transition. You saw a movie that was good.
Yes.
I did not. I saw Asteroid City by Wes Anderson.
TikTok famous Wes Anderson.
Yeah, the guy from the aesthetic.
From the memes, yeah.
This movie's getting okay reviews, 60-ish on Rotten Tomatoes. I was hanging out with a friend last night who saw it and really liked it. This is just me talking, little old Brady. And I'm a Wes Anderson defender. This movie was awful. This movie was awful. I need to rewatch Darjeeling Limited so I know where to place this movie on the list of bad Wes Anderson movies, because I'm not sure if it's his worst or his second worst, because I really dislike Darjeeling Limited so much that I considered it the worst. The stupid French Dispatch movie, which I was not a huge fan of because it's not a movie, is way better than this. This movie's awful.
What's the plot? I don't even know.
They're on it's not even a road trip. Jason Schwartzman and his children are in this town that the only thing to do in the town is there's a giant crater there from many millennia ago.
Okay.
And there's a science fair going on. The son is like won some sort of science competition and they're doing some sort of like science competition fair thing it's like some sort of space fair at the crater. The children's mother just died. Pick your karaoke of like Wes Anderson tropes. The kid's mother just died. It's like an older son and these three young daughters. Tom Hanks plays the grandfather. Scarlett Johansson is there who plays a famous actress with her daughter who's in the science fair. There's like five main kids in the science fair. Liev Schreiber plays one of the fathers of the science fair kids. Hope Davis plays the mother of one of the other science fair kids. Tilda Swinton is like a scientist there. Jeffrey Wright is a army general who's there. And they're all kind of, I'm not going to go into the details, but they're all there for like a week in this little town that just has like a hotel and a diner and a crater, and that's it.
Okay.
As Wes Anderson has been doing, there is a framing device that exists that like frames what you're seeing as something else. The movie, the same way that Grand Budapest Hotel, it's the girl reading the book at the cemetery of what's happening in Grand Budapest Hotel. In Royal Tenenbaums, it's the book of the Royal Tenenbaums that Alec Baldwin is narrating. So this is a pretty common framing device for Wes Anderson's films. So there's a framing device in this one where it's like they keep reminding you that what you're seeing is actually not happening, never happened in real life. It's actually a dramatic story that was written by a playwright a number of years before, and you're watching actors playing out the story, and you're cutting back and forth between a completely different set of staged circumstances where the actors are meeting the playwright and Bryan Cranston's narrating it. Ed Norton is there. None of the characters have anything to do. They're all monotone in the very Wes Anderson way that they are. And the framing device the characters are pretty tough to like attach to. And then the framing device that they keep cutting back to keeps reinforcing that these are just characters. These are actors playing these roles. There is no reason to care about what is happening at all.
Not into that. I can't say I'm into that.
Can there be, and maybe I'm misinterpreting it, maybe I'm a bit dense, but like, could there be some commentary there on art, performance, storytelling? Sure. It just wasn't
there. What is this, there Brecht?
It was incredibly Brechtian. I will say, if you know what I'm talking about, it's like incredibly Brechtian, his most Brechtian film yet, but not his breadiest film yet.
Yeah, clearly.
Royal Tenenbaums, that movie's got heart. Like, everyone's freaking monotone in it, but like,
they're a family.
But they're a family. It's got heart. It's got ups and downs in it. And this movie just had like nothing. They just kind of, every single character is just like staring off into the fucking desert and being like, you think this is going to happen tomorrow? No. What happened to you? My mom just died. Okay. You're like, and it's just,
yeah,
the art direction is like beautiful, and the costumes and the cinematography in this, like the color in this film is like amazing. And the first like maybe 20 minutes I was on board for the little girls, the three little girls who play Schwartzman's daughters. It's like the funniest thing in the world, like how they found these girls and just the writing for these like 4-year-old girls is amazing.
Cute.
This is the best part of the movie is these three little girls. But man, this movie was a complete freaking stinker, and we gotta like really investigate what we're doing with Wes here, man. Like,
but do you think at the end of the day, even if it was a flop, don't you think people should keep writing checks to someone like Wes Anderson?
That's what I'm getting at, and that's what I'm really debating here, because otherwise we just have Blue Beetle.
Yeah,
every that's movie what I'm is Blue Beetle.
But also, he has a long career, and like you said, it's long enough where maybe, not every movie a filmmaker makes is going to be a hit. He has to get to the next level. I don't know why I'm defending him. I'm not even a big fan of him.
I would say that probably post Grand Budapest, his movies have like really veered into this really concise direction where it's like, everything about it is Wes Anderson times 100, and like all just the, if you have a bunch of sliders and one of the sliders says emotion, one of the sliders says keeping everything in the center of the frame, all the Wes Anderson shit has just been slid to the top. And then all of what made his earlier movies good, the balance of emotion and deadpan, it's just gone. It's just gone. And yes, absolutely. But he's not really making anything good. And my complaint with The French Dispatch was like, this isn't a movie. This is like three little 25-minute shorts, which were borderline good to great. Like, I really liked the Benicio del Toro one. I thought that was amazing. The other two I was like less enthused about, but I thought were very entertaining to watch. I was like, why didn't Netflix just like pay my man and have him make 6 of them?
Right.
Trust me, I'm not a big Netflix fan. Like,
oh, we know.
I don't think anything they make is very good. But I'm not saying that he should not be allowed to make art, like whatever, but like, I think there does need to be like consequences a little bit, and he needs to like reevaluate what he's doing, because I find increasingly that his work is like failing to connect. Yeah. And Royal Tenenbaums, I think, is like, that's the peak for him. And he was maybe a little bit too unknown, was a little bit too artsy for 2003 or whenever it came out. You know, that was his opportunity for an Oscar. And I think Grand Budapest, which I think was actually nominated for Best Picture, was like an opportunity for an Oscar. He is like an artistic filmmaker who deserves who has such a unique perspective that like he should be awarded. Right.
Yeah.
For what he does and what he's brought to films, because now we're at a point where 20 years after Rushmore and Bottle Rocket, you're seeing people who are in their 20s and 30s becoming filmmakers now who are like using his aesthetic and they're riffing on it. You know, he is becoming a reference point in the way that younger filmmakers in the early 90s were using Scorsese's work as a reference point and building upon that. So I think he's very important, but like the movies just really stink now. And like he needs new collaborators, and like he needs to fucking direct something that he didn't write. I don't know if that's ever going to happen. It was just incredibly disappointing.
Did he do Fantastic Mr. Fox?
Yeah.
Like, did he write it?
I imagine he did. I could look it up really quickly, but I love Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Maybe you should do another little, you know, whose ears are absolutely ringing as we have this conversation. Kevin Feige, or however you pronounce his last name, who runs Marvel. He's like, yeah, they're right. Let's get him to direct our next Blue Beetle.
Yeah, it was Wes Anderson and Noah Baumbach wrote it.
Oh, Greta Gerwig's husband, famously. Wes Anderson has never been, I've never been a huge fan of his. Even Royal Tenenbaums, I'm not. Like, I've seen some of his movies. I've seen it, I feel, enough. And I won't talk shit on them because I think they are cool. That's the thing. I think they're cool. I think it's cool that he exists as a filmmaker. I'm just not, personally, it's not my cup of tea more often than not.
Are we good?
Yeah.
Okay. I got to talk about The Bear.
I know.
Cup of tea. Kitchens.
Get it?
Serving it's food. Here we go. The Bear. I liked but didn't love season one of The Bear. How did you feel about it?
Oh, I liked it. We watched it very quickly because it's just a very watchable show. It's only like 25. The episodes are like 25 minutes.
Yeah.
It's set in a kitchen, which we love. I love food. Jeremy Allen White. How did he become like within the first minute of the show? You're like, this guy's a hunk, even though he's not conventionally. Maybe he is. I don't know. I don't think he's conventionally attractive.
As someone who's not conventionally attractive, I'm always like very angry and upset when someone who has like very Roman features like myself is like,
I love Roman features.
Is like a hunk. I'm like, why don't people think I'm a hunk?
Maybe
I got less of a schnoz than Jerry. I have a schnoz.
But Jeremy Allen White is like sexy Gene Wilder.
He's buff, yeah. Oh, yeah. He is, yeah. Oh, my God.
So that appeals to, you know, all of us who liked the real Willy Wonka, not freaking Timmy Chalamet.
Charlie Chocolate. He's like if Gene Wilder was like in a Fast and Furious movie.
Yeah, he wears those white tees. But you know what? Well, and I've only seen the first, I think, four episodes of season two. What is so sexy about Carmi is that he is so respectful.
But also guy, so broken.
Yeah, I guess. I prefer the respectful part. This guy just... and he listens. He's such a good listener.
With those eyes, yeah. Look at
that. He is listening intently. You know he's taking in every word that anyone is saying to him. So that's all to say. I did like season one. I did like it.
I liked it, but didn't love it. Like, I felt like people were going a little bit crazy about the show. And I'm like, the show where like people just like drop pots and pans and yell at each other.
Okay. I think people were thirsty for like some more Uncut Gems energy. And so they found it was a little much.
Ladies and gentlemen, I love this show. Now,
wow.
The show has entered God level for me.
Whoa, that God high. Level show. I'm enjoying it, but I honestly found the Christmas episode a bit too August Osage County.
So you have watched it?
Yeah, I watched the Christmas episode.
Oh, okay. I thought you up until the start of it. We're going to spoil the show. Sorry, is what we do here on this pod.
Yeah.
This is like... there's like two episodes that are like massive standout episodes. This Christmas episode starts, and it starts with a flashback. And we had a flashback in the previous season. What's his name?
Carmi. cousin?
No, the
Mikey?
The Barenthal. John Barenthal. He hasn't seen the show about a young cook who's trying to take over his brother's restaurant after the brother passes away. John Barenthal plays the brother who passes away in the flashback.
Named Mikey.
Mikey in the flashbacks. And there's one flashback scene, the first season, and this season opens up and it's Carmy, it's Sugar, and it's Mikey standing outside of the house on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve or whatever. And they're smoking a cigarette and talking. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Another Barenthal flashback. I wonder what the rest of this episode will be. I thought that this was just going to be a quick cold open flashback. And then the episode is going to start and we're just going to have a regular episode of the bear.
Yeah.
Did you know that, what you were in for?
I don't know what I'm in for anytime I watch this show. I don't know. I don't think it usually, they've been going on there before this episode, two different secondary characters just go on food tours, one in Chicago and one in Copenhagen.
Yeah.
And that's what the episodes were. So I don't ever know what I'm going to get.
I was assuming it was just going to be a regular episode of The Bear, much as you could say any episode of The Bear is regular. But they're having this thing. I'm like, okay, well, they got Barenthal for a day. And he's saying some words of wisdom as the departed brother. And the flashback's going to be over. And the scene ends. And they walk inside the house. And Bob Odenkirk is there.
Yeah.
And
John Mulaney.
John Mulaney's there. Yeah. Sarah Paulson, the goddess of FX, is there.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lee Curtis is there. Yeah. Gillian Jacobs is there. And you're like, holy fucking shit. These people are all here for an episode.
Yeah.
And the opening credits start and I'm like, holy shit. They brought in the big guns and we're about to see a crazy, crazy episode because these people aren't here for a day. These people are here for the long haul. And this episode is an hour long. The rest of the episodes are 25 minutes long. And it is so incredible. It is so stressful. Jamie Lee Curtis plays just the most damaged, awful mother in the world who's constantly crying, constantly drunk, constantly blaming her kid.
I have an issue with saying she's awful.
What?
I have an issue. I thought with saying she's just awful. I think they did a really good job of her making her sympathetic because she says, I mean, I get she's got issues. She's not a great mom or a great, but I don't think she's Livia Soprano level awful. Cause she says, make everything beautiful for everyone else. No one makes anything beautiful for me. I understand they tried and she pushes people away, but I thought they did a really good job of making her somewhat sympathetic. She's still a fucking mess, but I'm just going to say that.
She's very toxic. Mother.
Yes, definitely toxic. That's true. Toxic is a better word, I think. Yes.
Very toxic. And everyone gets one or two banger scenes in this episode. And it is just top notch. And what's interesting as it's going on is man, Bob Odenkirk hasn't done much on this episode yet. And I'm waiting. And then Odenkirk gets a fucking crazy scene at the end of the episode. I was shocked and stunned. And I know everyone's talking about this episode. It's very showy for all the
stars.
Guest stars in it. But this show has skipped a level. I'm not going to spoil for you the next episode right after the Christmas episode. Whew. Fantastic television.
Can I ask you something?
Yes.
Because I just forget. How did Mikey die?
He's something about drugs, either an overdose or suicide. Sorry, trigger warning. Post facto trigger warning.
Because I was realizing during that episode, I didn't remember what.
Something related to addiction and mental health struggles.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
He didn't go in the sub.
No, he didn't go in the sub. Emily didn't go in the sub. The sub sandwich, because he runs the bear. I also was like, why do they call them the bear? And this is the episode where it became clear. Their last name is Berzotti.
Yeah.
I liked this episode. My husband was like, oh, I could watch this episode again. I was like, you do that. I'm good. Like, even though I saw August Osage County on Broadway twice because I thought it was so good. But this episode really was so August Osage County. I was sort of like, did they get Famously Chicago and Tracy Letts in here?
Tracy Letts. Like, from Darkwater.
Yeah. Yeah. Goddamn autocorrect. Because it was just, you know, if you like families yelling at each other at the dinner table, yeah. Boy, is this the episode for you. I like it in small doses. I enjoyed this episode. I don't need to rewatch it immediately. I like the season. I like that the season is delving into the other characters a lot more. We all love Ayo Edebiri. I think is her last name. I think she's fab. And I even texted Brett. So in this season, they give Red Hot Carmi a love interest. She's like a doctor. She's the girl next door. And I was in the first episode that she appears in, I was like, ooh, I love her. Just because I wanted to see Carmi happy. But now, as I've gotten further in, I actually think I want Carmi and Sid to get together.
They are teasing that a little. I felt like they were teasing that a little bit. They're also teasing another romance with Sid. I don't want to spoil the rest of the season for you.
Okay.
So remember, like 25 minutes ago, I was like, and you were talking about young actresses, and I was like, oh, I got a transition.
Oh, Ayo, is that why?
No.
Yeah.
Molly. Oh. Well, she, yo, not no. Ayo Edebiri, she's amazing on the show.
I think she's so fat.
I was thinking of Molly Gordon, who plays the love interest this season.
I think she's really cute. Really cute. And very natural. They find these great natural actors.
That was like the thing about her. Like, I'd never seen her. Well, I guess I had, because I guess she was in Booksmart, a movie that I really like, but have only seen once. I don't remember who she played or whatever. But like, this woman is so, I mean, everyone's so natural. This woman is so natural. This woman is like magnetic. I was like.
Mm-hmm. She's very good.
I bumped against something at the beginning. It was what you texted me. They have this like meet cute, like they've known each other for years or whatever. They have this meet cute, and she like asks for his number, and he gives her the wrong number, which that like, they did in such a fucking subtle way, because in the earlier in the episode, he's like talking to, you know, a repairman at the shop, they're, you know, at the restaurant, they're trying to get something installed or fixed or whatever. Yeah. And the repairman is like, what's your phone number? And he says his number out loud. Mm-hmm. And then later in the episode, he's saying you can tell something's off about this meet cute. He's saying his number again, and he like takes a pause, and then he says one number different. The last number is different. And you're like, oh my God. I, as a very bitter single adult man, I bumped against the fact that this beautiful woman who is like
a doctor.
She's a doctor. Just like this one, this actress is like so magnetic and warm. He gives her the wrong number, and like a couple days later, she's like, "Hey, boy, let's go on a date."
Even though I know you gave me the wrong number,
No one who has been jilted in such a way would want to date that person. I bumped again. I was pissed off that they get together. I was legitimately upset that they get together after this.
You were up at night.
I was up at this. Night tossing and turning.
Yeah. Here's what I'll say on behalf of that character.
Women. No, you have to answer for all of women. You are a monolith today here on this pod.
On behalf of women, the only way it was acceptable is because they knew each other. She knew him. They knew each other. They were next door neighbors or something.
Yeah, like they've known each other for decades,
their whole lives. So that's why it was like she knows him, and this is like something that he would do.
And
so
like she'd always had a crush on him too, or something like that.
Yeah, that's the only way that you could sort of allow that.
I'm just saying, in the current
plus
age,
the way he looked at her when she talked.
The current age, a swipe in and this and that. I got no tolerance for fake numbers, for ghosting, for that stuff. Once you do that to me, you're out. And once I'm sure a man does that to a woman, she's out. I know it's special circumstances. It's Jeremy Allen White.
The way he looked at
Hunky
her.
Hunky Gene Wilder.
Oh my gosh. When she's talking. That's all women. Women want two things. They want the correct phone number and for you to look at them the way he looks at her when they're in the deli.
Carmi could only do one of them. I will say that as the season goes on and as it concludes, I became incredibly invested in the relationship and the resolution or non-resolution of that storyline this season.
That's the other thing. It's a nice tight season. Both of them are. It's like eight episodes. Not as tight as The Idol at only five episodes.
Which we'll have to talk about after tomorrow. I love this. And I didn't go from hate to love. I went from strong like to, wow, this is actually really something special. I mean, I think the thing with that first season, and you hit it, like there's an Uncut Gems energy to it. And this season, they turned it down a little bit and they have definitely quieter episodes. They have episodes where one of the characters goes to Copenhagen. Make some amazing yogurt. Looking stuff, you know?
Yeah. Oh, other unconventional hottie, by the way, is in that episode. Will Poulter.
Will Poulter, yeah. So yeah, cannot recommend enough. Sorry for spoiling part of it. Questions, comments? We got some, right?
We do. I've been dreading this moment because I read them from my phone and my phone is not in this.
Well, here's the thing. I doubt we have anything. We don't have anything on Twitter because as we speak
Let's
of this,
pretend.
It's 1 p.m. Pacific time on Saturday the 1st.
Can we pretend someone asked me for my review of Hijack on Apple Plus?
Sure. Okay. I just want to say that there are no Twitter questions because your boy... Elon is like, you can only look at 600 tweets today. Goodbye.
He turned it off.
It's
he
for something Twitter different off. Than the fact that we owe Google, who does our cloud services, $1 billion. It's different than that. We swear it's not that. Don't ask about it.
They must have done it this weekend because they figured everyone's out enjoying their lives because it's a long
it's
weekend.
It's hilarious. Anyways, Twitter is like completely broken now. There are it some Discord broken. Cues, but hey, at fake Min 123 says, what do Danny think of Hijack on Apple TV?
I watched the first two episodes of Hijack starring Idris Elba on Apple TV Plus, and I'm going to spoil it. So everyone, and it's only the first two episodes, but so everyone be aware. Idris Elba of Luther, 6'2", British, built from marble. Okay. This guy looks like he can win in a fight, and he often does in his other projects. They cast him as a nerd. Like, why? This is such a weird casting choice. And he's the star of the show. The show is about this guy who gets on a flight that gets hijacked. And the twist of the show is that, okay, episode one, they hijack it. The twist of the show is Idris goes, I'm a top corporate negotiator. And I want to help you hijack the plane. Oh. So it's like, instead of like... I guess maybe it'll twist back into actually he's doing this to help the other passengers. No, he's like, I'm a big time corporate negotiator. I use my brains. I don't have to use the fact that I'm 6'2", Idris Elba, built from marble. I'm going to sit down and talk. Like, I can't believe the miscast. I get that he doesn't always want to be Luther or like fighting crime in that way, but it's like even Harrison Ford, when he was playing the President of the United States, punches the hijackers and says, get off my plane.
This is not get off my plane. This is The Negotiator 2.0. The Negotiator, a great film starring Samuel L. Jackson and someone else. Someone whose name I cannot remember, nor will I say on these airwaves. But that movie, should you choose to see it, is really fucking good.
Yeah.
Have you seen The Negotiator with Samuel L. Jackson and someone else?
Who is it? Kevin Spacey?
Kevin Spacey, yeah.
Okay. I have not.
This movie is, if you want to watch an amazing Saturday afternoon action thriller that TNT plays with commercials, I have a movie for you. It is called The Negotiator.
I love those movies.
The Negotiator. Samuel L. Jackson is the best cop negotiator, terrorist negotiator in Chicago. He gets framed for a crime because his partner dies. And he knows he's innocent. So he takes the police building hostage and he says, the police, like the second in line police negotiator calls and is like, hey, Samuel L. Jackson, you got to come down from that. And Samuel L. Jackson says, I'm only going to talk to one other negotiator. You have to get him. He's like the best negotiator in like Peoria or whatever, or right. like Milwaukee. And his name is Kevin Spacey. Yeah. And Kevin, they have to fly Kevin Spacey in because he's the only negotiator that
wow.
Samuel Jackson will talk to. And it's the two best police negotiators in the world negotiating with each other. Paul Giamatti's in it. Other people are in it. It's really good.
Okay. I'll put it on the list. Awesome. It sounds like exactly the type of movie I would like to see, except I don't like what they're doing on Hijack.
Okay.
So I'm just going to say another flop for Apple TV Plus. The only good show on Apple TV Plus is Platonic, which we love.
No, it's Severance. We like Severance here. Was it too weird for you?
Yeah, I'm just, yeah.
Too it was. Nerdy for you.
Yeah.
Pisky asks, Dr. Pepper, thoughts?
The doctor on Love, Marriage at First Sight, or the drink?
I'm going to answer as if it's the drink.
Okay.
Yes. It's got 22, the drink?
No.
23 herbs and spices.
No. I don't like Dr. I don't drink Dr. Pepper. I'm trying to drink Kombucha
yeah.
more.
How's that working out for you?
It's not.
Diet Coke is top tier for me, S level soda.
How do you feel about the fact that aspartame is going to cause cancer for you more now?
Oh, I have the fucking receipts, girl. Don't worry about it. I would say Dr. Pepper is either S tier or just below it in A tier. It is probably my second favorite soda after Diet Coke. Aspartame. Okay. We're good. We are good.
How so? Pray tell.
So there's like a carcinogen ranking system, yes. tier system.
The woke FCC or this whatever is, they are. Yeah. Who are they?
This is at the bottom. They put it on the bottom. They put red meat higher than Diet Coke. They put hot beverages higher than Diet Coke.
Oh, anything hot?
Anything hot. The amount of aspartame you need to drink daily for it to be any issue to you is like 36 cans a day, which I'm a fiend.
Yeah.
But even I do not have more than maybe 2 to 3 cans of Diet Coke a day, which is a lot. Sometimes I don't, but I'm crushing it today. I'm feeling a little crusty today, but we're good. Also, yo, I'm turning 36 in a month. I have been drinking Diet Coke since I can remember. The damage is done.
The damage is done.
What has been done to my, like, DNA or whatever? Like, it's been done. I've literally been drinking Diet Coke since I was a child. Like, I don't remember when I started drinking Diet Coke. It was just something.
Did you have a drink fridge growing up?
Oh yeah, in the garage.
Like in the garage.
Still have a drink fridge. One day I'll have a drink fridge again.
I know, it's a dream. It's a pipe dream.
It's obviously like a big headline. Oh, fucking woke news media. Is that again? I think that the headline, Diet Coke is killing you. I've known this for fucking 35 years. Also, no one is reporting on the fact that like chemical level, there is a level of aspartame that is like dangerous to have per day. And it is like, it is just like chugging a giant bathtub full of Diet Coke, which even I do not do. So
even I, a jaded New Yorker, what does do not kill
you, make you stronger. I'm good. Whatever. I can't stop now.
No, at this point, yeah, you're right. The damage has been done. You might as well live a life you enjoy.
Jump for Joy asks, have you seen the woman playing the ukulele and would you ever consider a 10-minute song to clap back at your rivals?
To clap back at my haters? Well, I saw the clips and I've seen like the 30-second sound bite that's become a sound. I have to say, do you know who Miranda Sings is and Colleen Ballinger?
Yeah, I mean,
I know of her because like
the at thumbnail our age, is so disgusting to me that I cannot watch any of her content.
Well, I am not a fan of her content, even though I was aware of her because I feel like she is in our cohort, and she's just someone I was aware of as like a YouTuber who was incredibly successful, who like got to have a show on Netflix, who I think like did Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Jerry Seinfeld, like goes on tour. Like she's a very, very successful YouTuber. The reason she is successful is she does this character that did not ever appeal to me because I am not a child. I am her the same age as this woman. And so I was like, okay, this is like a kid's show. I'm not interested in this.
Yeah.
And so, but I was aware of her as an actor or as a creator. So now there's all this stuff about coming out about her. Like, I don't even know what to say.
I don't even know. I don't even know the specifics.
I don't want to know. I'm like, I was never interested in this character. I don't want to get interested now. I don't like. Ultimately, when I hear about YouTubers getting canceled, I'm sort of like, this seems like a very natural progression, actually. Like, this doesn't seem that shocking to me. So I don't know any of the details other than like the clip, the screen grab. And I would honestly prefer to keep it that way. I think my life is okay not knowing any
I'm
of this.
I'm with you. Thank I'm with you. You. I kind of, yeah. I saw like 12 seconds of like whatever everyone's like upset about or whatever. And it was like so cringy. I was like, yeah, whatever people are angry about, sign me up. Whatever. Sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, go with God. You
know? Don't sign me up if it's a bad thing.
Yeah. I'm
I ain't going to read all that. I'm happy for you or sorry that it happened.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I have a bigger fish to fry, like defending The Weeknd and the Idol. Well,
we'll be there. We'll do our emergency Idol pod tomorrow night, right?
Anything else from our wonderful listeners?
When are we going to have the official Hey Julie meet and greet at Applebee's? And where can we get free tickets to the new Indiana Jones? It's part of the same
message. Wow. What a specific question.
We had our, I mean, next time you come to LA.
Me?
Yeah.
Or the person sent the question.
No, not you. No, not you, the listener, Danielle.
I don't know when I'm next coming to LA.
We'll go to Applebee's and then we'll say like...
Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do it in the winter.
We'll be like, hey, we're going to this Applebee's. Just like when we're doing a
pod. Let's do it in the winter. No, we should do it at the cafe at Whole Foods.
Where we saw Hillary Swank. Hillary Swank.
Yeah. I think we should do it. West Hollywood. Okay, fine. Thank you so much for your questions and comments. We understand that Twitter is broken and that we're still a month out Reddit from Big Brother.
This is a whole thing. Other thing I want to talk about today. The end of social media. Twitter, broken.
I know. It's Reddit, over.
Gone.
It's over.
It's actually still there, but you can't use apps or you have to use Reddit's apps, which they don't really care about. So,
yeah.
You know, end of social media. It's crazy.
It's crazy. It's so crazy that all this is happening. Well, Lauren's gone. Yeah.
That's it for the episode today. Happy Canada Day to everyone. Happy 4th of July to everyone. Be safe. Do not blow your hands or appendages off. Because how else are you going to listen to this
Don't
podcast?
Do that.
And yeah, we'll be back next week. We will absolutely talk about the Idol finale and whatever else happens as we wait.
And that's
for
a promise and a threat.
You know, BB25, I guess, tweeted us at HeyJulieBB. Join the Discord. Discord.
Yeah.
Discard the Twitter. Disjoin the Discord. The link is in the podcast description on YouTube or whatever. And hey, Julie. Social media fails. Email reigns. Email is going strong. Hey, Julie, Big Brother at gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Bye, Julie.
Bye, Julie.